telling about things that matter to them and what helps them to stay human. Our topic for today's show is something people only talk about in private, often feel guilty or anxious about it, but it's something we all think about every day.
Money.
Money.
Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes the world go around, it makes the world go round. A mark, a yen, a buck or a pound.
A mark, a yen,
a buck or a pound. It's all that makes the world go around, that clinking, clanking sound. That makes the world go round. Money, 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 money.
If you happen to be rich and to feel like a night's entertainment, you can pay for gay escape. If you happen to be rich and alone and you need a companion, you can ring
ting-a-ling
for the mate. If you happen to be rich and you find you are left by your lover and you moan and you can't find a lot, you can take it on the chin, call a cab and begin to recover on your 14-carat yacht.
What? Money makes the world go round, the world go round, the world go round. Money makes the go round, of that we both are sure. Being poor.
Money, 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 money,
today's show, a few different ways of looking at the economy. None of them the sorts of things you can learn from economists. You see that phrase, the economy, like it's actually a thing, or like I might actually know what they're talking about, or they might actually know what they're talking about. The economists do know how to measure stuff, and they can break it down dozens of ways to slice it, average it, track the trends, and make predictions that are almost always wrong. Heck, I can make wrong predictions from the comfort of my home. I don't need experts doing it for me. Anyway, studying graphs and charts has never taught me much of anything, and especially with economics, they only measure what they can give a number, and the value they assign to anything is how much money can you get for it. So I thought today we'll look at the economy from a different angle. We'll hear from some small business owners about how they look at it, and from recording artist Annie Humphrey, who sees it from the outside, you might say. As does our first teller today, Simon Gretton. He's an active part of the community life of Grand Rapids. I get the impression that nearly everyone knows him. Everyone who does knows no one else quite like him either. Here's Simon Gretton.
I've been lucky in that I haven't needed a lot. So a lot of what's come my way, I've been able, especially money, I've been able to give away. It costs me about literally to live my life, and this isn't making any sacrifices, but to live all the life that I want to live costs me about $8,000 a year. I made last year was the most money I'd ever made in my life, personally, paid to me. And that was like about $15,000 or $16,000 a year. So basically about half of what I earned, I was able to give away, whether that be to different local and international charitable things on a number of fronts. And just, you know, I'm pretty well acquainted with a lot of people who are struggling in life. And so just able to help them out with, you know, paying people's rent here and there and things like that. So, and similarly, because I need so little to get by with, I'm able to spend a lot of the time doing things that I want to do that feel like I'm just making a contribution maybe, and not have to worry whether a paycheck follows those. In terms of the things that I've got for free, that's, in my mind, that's a lot more so. I think part of the reason that I'm able to live so cheap is that for whatever reason, I just don't seem to be very interested in a lot of the things that you spend money on, houses, cars, clothes, or any of those sorts of things that typically people or fancy food or even any. I mean, I need to eat, but I'm about the least picky eater in the world, so I can get by with just about anything. I pretty much spend almost zero or pretty much zero on food. And there's a number of ways I do. Well, the main way that I do it is just by really not being picky about what I eat, but I genuinely like just about anything that anyone ever steers my way. And so much food is discarded and wasted, and it's just a poor, and that clearly has a major human and economic and environmental impact all over the world. Just the 50% or whatever it is of food that we waste in this country clearly has, I don't think it's too harsh to say that has life and death consequences for people on a number of levels, whether it's, water depletion or climate change or just people in some parts of the world who can't have access to their own land because it's being used to grow food to send to us over here. And then we go ahead and waste half of it. And, if we didn't, there'd be to be more available for them. But I've done a fair amount of dumpster diving over the years, and I won't embarrass anyone by saying which entities in town I've got food from, but I'd be lying if I said that hadn't been a part of it. So many people know that I'll eat just about anything, and so often people are discarding things either because they've got extra or they don't like it or whatever, or they've made it for their kids and the kids won't eat it or something. And it's like, hey, if you ever have stuff like that, send it my way. And word gets around pretty quickly. And so I end up with things like that. When people are cleaning out their cupboards, when they're moving house, it's amazing how many things I'll get sent that way. Recently, Grace House, the homeless shelter, I volunteer a lot of time there. And just like any health department facility, they're limited into how long they can serve stuff. So let's say somebody has a neighborhood picnic or a church do, and there's a bunch of food left over. Lots of those folks will send it over to the homeless shelter, which is great. Unfortunately, they can often only keep it for up to 4 days, depending on what it is. And then they have to throw it out. But I really haven't paid for food in quite a long time. I've bought a few things for a few other people for gifts and taken an odd person out for a meal when they've been a guest in town and those sorts of things. But in terms of paying for groceries on a regular basis, I just really don't do it or haven't done it for quite a number of years. For me, the biggest free gift I get is just being able to, especially living in a beautiful place like Itasca County, just being able to go outside and walk around and look at the river and ride my bike, paddle my canoe, put on my skis or snowshoes. And if I can do those things, and opportunities to do that are readily available, you know, at a moment's notice here. If I can do that, then I literally don't need a whole lot of other stuff in my life, and that stuff is all more or less free, just around the corner and out the back door. Other things that I like to do, I've been fortunate that I really just get a lot out of participating in community events like library programs and community forums, and just generally trying to get involved in civic life and community life in as much as I can. And almost all of that stuff is free. And you know, I think we're pretty lucky in Grand Rapids here that there's a pretty good, robust offering of all of those kinds of things. And First Friday and all of that stuff is basically free. I mean, yes, I need to eat something. I need a roof over my head. But that stuff really can be just about as minimal as it's legal to be. And any more than that literally doesn't make me any happier. In fact, I'd say that the converse is true. The more I have, the more stuff I have, and the more space I have to worry about that's mine, then that almost things, I quickly feel owned by my possessions more than I feel that I own them. So it's just sort of the way that I want to live. And yes, I'll take all the credit for being incredibly virtuous for sure. But I really think more than anything, I'm just kind of lucky that I've been, had the temperament that can enjoy living this way and really feel like I've got a full and abundant life.
Simon Gretton in Grand Rapids, living the abundant life. It does seem like most of us, whatever we get, we want more. And that's what makes the economy work, right? One of the big bank credit card companies has an ad campaign that gleefully calls out, "What's in your wallet?" Meaning you should borrow more money, and if you do, you'll have more, and then you'll need more. I got my first taste of the life that I should have been born into at the Wellspring Conference Center in Wisconsin, beautiful Frank Lloyd Wright building, and everybody participating in this conference got their own cabin with a working fireplace. The towels were so thick and soft, you just wanted to hold on to them. I have no idea what the thread count on the sheets might have been, but I really liked the bedside lamp that was sound-activated, just clap and it goes on or off. Suddenly, at the middling age of 40-something, I felt how swell, how fine it would be to be a swell, have one of those black credit cards with no limit, live like this all the time, not just for the weekend. And I figure if I lived like that, even for a year or two, I'd be pretty sure I deserved it. Really, it was Northwest Airlines that helped me appreciate being first class. Before they were bought out by Delta, I was flying in and out of Minnesota quite a lot, so I built up these points. It got to where, on any given flight, the odds that I'd get an empty seat in first class were about the same as drawing to an outside straight, like 3 out of 10. A good bet in this case, since I was flying anyway. And I'll tell you what, when you're sitting in that wide, comfy seat and a friendly steward is bringing you a free cocktail while all those regular people are shuffling and slubbing their bags and twisting down to their seats, you know that you deserve everything you've got. You don't have much in common with the commoners. And this is so obvious and so reinforcing. I mean, one bathroom just for the 20 of us, they can use their own ones back there. So reinforcing that the logic of it must expand infinitely for those who always fly first class, and on to the ones who have their own driver take them to the airport, or the ones with their own jet planes. I'd like to think that if I had a house in the Rockies and another in the Caribbean, I wouldn't also want an apartment in Manhattan. I probably would, though. Abby Disney, whose grandfather was Walt Disney's brother and business partner, was born rich, and she wrote a terrific column about this issue just last year. From her own direct observation, she says that the rich are different from the rest of us. But they're not different for the reason that they think, which is that they're superior to everyone else and their wealth is proof that this is so. Disney says, no, they're different because money warps their view of the world. Her list of things that come with wealth: entitlement, narcissism, isolation, unwillingness to take criticism, and on and on. It's pretty impressive. Here's my favorite part of her essay. She writes, "One person I know, when dialing 911 in an emergency, stopped for a second to ask themselves, isn't there a special number for someone like me to call? This is a little funny and a lot tragic. When adrenaline fails to trump your sense of entitlement, when a medical emergency still cannot convince you that you are not something better than merely human, you've lost yourself to catastrophic arrogance." That's Abigail Disney in an article called "The Rich Should Be Paying More, and Yes, That Means Me." And you know, those psychological and social costs of entitlement and isolation, it's not only the very wealthy who are subject to those. I'll take a first-class upgrade any day, but I'll try at least to remember who I am.
I don't want much in this life, just the simple things I treasure. Till I die, I would get by on fame, riches, and sensual pleasure. I don't ask much in this life, no special consideration. Just treat me like His Majesty, I'll be friendly OPEC nation. Some people just don't know when to stop. Some people, they just won't quit till they reach the top. But I'm so easy go, make my way through life on love and understanding from a rich and beautiful wife.
Mix of words and music. This week, it's all about the economics and about some of the things economists leave out of their indexes and indicators. I asked my friend Annie Humphrey what she thinks about the economy.
Well, I kind of know what everybody else thinks. They think about economy and jobs. You know, you have a job, spend money to keep the economy rolling, and it's a vicious cycle. But when I think about it, inside of my own head, I think about how we have an old economy, an economy that existed before capitalism, before cash. So it's not a new concept, right? That I'm kind of everywhere I go now, this is my thing I'm preaching is the old economy, which all it is, there's no special formula and there's no organizing to be done. There's no protesting to be done. There's no building to be done. All it is, you know, we all have established circles that we are involved in, and we're in those circles either because we love what the circle's about or we love the people in the circle or both. So really all it is people helping one another and not waiting for to like hear a rumor that someone has a problem. It's this circle thing, right? It's first of all recognizing the circle or circles you belong to. And you start there. And if you have a group of 7, 12, 20 people, you have an immense amount of skills and resources in that circle that could be moved around a little bit. And the people in that circle would, a lot of needs could be met. I talk about it a lot. And now it's become so that any kind of circle I meet with, I bring it in. But also with the last Sunday of every month, we have a gathering. Fire in the Village hosts a Sunday circle in room 203 at the Old Central School. So with that group of people, we have begun to actively, practice this economy. And people are getting things they need. And it was so big as a young mother had a leaky roof, and some of the guys in that circle went to her house with the ladders and figured it out. So, I mean, getting a roof fixed for a mother with little kids and not a whole bunch of money to be thrown at a roof, I mean, it's huge. And so it doesn't take a whole lot. Like, people think, I really can't commit to getting involved and being a do-gooder in a community. But you really can if it's in your own family or people you care about. And I always go back to that because I feel like it's more effective. So then that backs up further. We want to go further upstream to this economy thing and circles. It's important to connect face-to-face, human-to-human, to make this work, right? You can't, like, put on Facebook, I need this. Can somebody get me one? I mean, maybe it works like that, but there's no real connection between people. So in Aiken, we had a circle like this over at the Sampaguita, and the result of that one circle was a gentleman in that community would provide transportation for a lot of the elders, take them to the store, give them rides, take them where they, and then his car broke down. So it didn't just affect him. It affected all these people that he was, serving out of the kindness of his heart. And other people in the community knew that his reputation, that he really did do these things. And so 2-3 people in that circle got together and bought him a car. Now he's back, and all these people that he serves are not struggling anymore. So I don't know if they all loved each other, but they loved their community, and they knew that this guy had the credibility, that he really did do this, had a reputation. He wasn't saying, hey, someone buy me a car because I want to help people. The community recognized it. It seems like cars are a big topic right now, even in my family. And so we've had cars shuffle around in my own family to accommodate a young couple and their baby. And so, yeah, they borrowed a car from me for a while. And then someone in our family stepped up, said, I have this old truck. They can have it. And so now they got rid of their old truck that's been sitting in the driveway, and I get my car back. And then and then they have a vehicle. There has to be trust. But also just, we're just visiting the last Sunday, and I think it had snowed a lot, And so we had a really small group show up. So I decided, let's make little Christmas or paper ornaments and sit around the big table and visit. And so just through visiting, one of the women said, my mom used to work for this smoker, like a meat smoking place, and they were shutting down, and they just gave me the smoker. And right away, another dude at that table said, OMG, I just went up to Canada and got me a moose, and I need a smoker. I mean, so it's just by talking, you'd be like, oh, I have one of those. Or where you wouldn't know that. She wouldn't have told them, hey, I got a smoker, unless you're sitting in a circle in community, hanging out and sharing. You know, the Anishinaabe people were given a way of life. Okay, so if the world goes crazy, if we could just get back to that way of life, which we're not, you know, I mean, you know, we could live and thrive because we were given a way of life. But that goes for anybody. And, you know, it doesn't matter what color you are, you all come from tribal people. And we all were given a way of life in connection to the earth, which... Even when I hear myself say that stuff, it sounds like people are going to roll their eyes like it's impossible. And, well, I try to live in a way that's very simple. And when I talk about, I was talking to Sean about, like, I want to get my property down to where it doesn't need any U.S. dollars to run it, and I mean, I always owe student debt, and I always owe taxes. I'll pay that so I don't lose my house. And he said, "Don't you do that already?" I'm like, "No, man, not even close." But it's all relative. So it's like, what can you manage? What can you do? And putting it into action is easy, and it's. It's just really about helping one another and sharing skills and sharing resources, because I think we all have a lot of resources laying around, and we keep buying more. So we have two of everything. So why don't you give one away to someone who doesn't have one? And it doesn't have to be a big public spectacle either, where you get the city council involved or get everybody involved and let's make a big story about giving something away to homeless people or something. It should just be for no other reason but that you can, right? And then eventually you'll get something back. That's just how it works.
That's Annie Humphrey, a community builder, artist, warrior, teacher, award-winning singer-songwriter. She'll be featured in a live show coming up at Clockout Brewing in Grand Rapids on Saturday, February 28th. We're putting on a storytelling concert, Stories for Spirit and Courage. She'll be one of several spirited tellers, and she said she might even play a new song from her upcoming CD. That's the last day of February at 7 o'clock. Hope you can join us. Open mic, too, so bring your own courage. Here's something from Annie Humphrey's The Sound of Ribbons CD, Open Your Eyes.
Let the president live on welfare for 6 months, and let judges be colorblind just once.
Welcome to People Powered Radio, KAXE, KBXE, streaming this one-of-a-kind broadcast service at KAXE.org. A lot of the programs you hear on Northern Community Radio are produced by volunteers. We're working for love, not money. I'm Michael Goldberg, and I bring this show, Stay Human, because I want to hear people's stories. This week, I'm trying to find out how to think about the economy. Coming up, we'll be hearing from some small business owners about how they look at it and what's important to them. I never studied economics or statistics in college, nothing like that, and I've never really understood how it all works. I did learn a valuable lesson, though, at the university club, a lesson that had nothing to do with the classes I was taking at college. At the time, I lived near Summit Avenue in St. Paul, and I used to walk its wide midway every day, lush lilacs in the spring, wide-spreading old oak trees, and great views of the mansions that lined either side, including the governor's mansion. There was one huge building right on Summit Hill that drew my attention in particular. There were always these late-model BMWs, Mercedes, long Lincolns or Caddies driving up to its door. Even on the slushiest winter day, these cars gleamed, and so did the people who got out of them. Expensive haircuts. And even from the sidewalk, you could see that they had a certain air of confidence as they handed the car keys to a valet to park it for them. The University Club, it was called, and I had no idea what they did there or who its members were, but I had a pretty good guess that I was not a candidate. So I acted right away when I saw the help wanted sign, as I was at the time paycheck wanted. I got hired in the kitchen as the salad man. And this was not your iceberg sort of place. All soft Boston butter lettuce and shredded vegetables that I'd never even heard of. It was a good job. No valet parking, of course. I never did go in the front door. The other guys working there were easy to get along with. And Jean, the head cook, while not exactly friendly, was a good boss. He gave clear directions and didn't get too bent out of shape if the tomato wedges were lopsided or the avocado was in the wrong place. It just made me go back and do it again. After I'd worked there only 3 or 4 days, Jean comes up to me at the end of my shift with a wrapped short rack of ribs. "Here, take this," he says. "We won't be using it." And then, a few days later, it's a pork loin. "Extra," he says, "bring it home." So I did. At the time, I was renting a room in the apartment of this couple, and suddenly I was their A1-rated roommate. But then, when it happened the third time, I asked one of the other kitchen staff, "What's up with this? Does he do this for everybody?" "Oh, you bet," I was told, "and you'd better take whatever he gives you, or you'll get fired." Jean, it seemed, had been robbing the place blind for as long as he'd worked there. And his policy was to share the booty with the staff so that we'd all be complicit. No one would ever think of turning him in. For the rest of the time I lived in that apartment, I checked the supermarket prices and paid part of my rent in steaks, chickens, roasts. It was an excellent benefits package. Looking back now on how readily I went along with this, it seems like a kind of loss of innocence. But I guess that's what they send you to school for anyhow. If I thought about it at all at the time, I thought of those guys in their shiny cars and shiny shoes, the club members. I was never allowed into the dining hall. The salad man must remain unseen. But I figured these guys didn't care about or even notice the cost of keeping the kitchen staff going, as long as their meals looked right on the plate. And anyway, as I learned later in life, few of them were strangers to larceny or cutting corners or slicing off a little extra for themselves, because a very important rule of business is mind your own.
Oh, well, a cowboy goes to town and spends his money round. Whenever he gets that jingle in his jeans, he'll never learn to say, gonna squander to his grave. Whenever he gets that jingle in his jeans, I hear that jingle jangle, and I dance like a bojangle, and I buy the rounds and wind up feeling just a little bit mean. In the morning I always go to town and spend my money round. Whenever I get that jingle in my jeans, whenever he gets that jingle in his jeans. He'll never learn to say, I'm gonna squander to his grave. Whenever he gets that jingle in his jeans. When there's money in my pocket, I take off like a rocket to the nearest bar and spend it foolishly till it's gone. I always go to town and spend my money round. Whenever I get that jingle in my jeans. Whenever I get that jingle in my jeans.
That's the cowboy entertainer Dave Staney. It's always fun to go to town with that jingle in your jeans. When I first moved to this area in the 1970s, I lived in Otonegan Township, north of Deer River. I met a lot of people in the area who turned out to be lifelong friends, but Deer River was never like town. We moved to the Grand Rapids zip code a year later. As an outsider, Deer River seemed to me like it had been pretty much abandoned years before. And it really hadn't changed much at all for decades until the last couple of years. There's a revival going on there. If you're driving east on Highway 2, you might notice a mural in the middle of town says, "Good things happen here. Destination Deer River." Well, good things don't just happen by themselves. I wanted to know who's behind this. So I called Chelsea Pusk, one of several entrepreneurs in Deer River, owner of the Chocolate Dog Homemade Candies. And she set me up with Jen Gorman, who recently opened Lady Sipper in Deer River. And Jen said, sure, good idea, but I had to meet Nikki Ossie, who puts so much energy into the community, and also the person who owns the downtown building where her store is located, Bree Church.
Hi, Michael. I'm Brianna Church. I have been in Deer River for most of my life. My husband and I both graduated from Deer River. I graduated in 2006. Grew up here. I did take a 12-year hiatus and followed my husband while he served active duty military. We are back in the community now, and we've been here for about 2.5 years now. My parents both graduated from Deer River High School. Also, I think born and raised in the area. Grandparents also, yes, on my dad's side. They went to school in Deer River as well. Plenty of family members that I'm, yes. It's very fun, and that's why we're back. Love it.
I'm Jen Gorman, and I've been in Deer River since December 15th of 2023. Not as anything other than someone who hung out at the chocolate store. I met Chelsea across the street. I fell in love with Charlie, and then Chelsea's okay too. So I started hanging out. Charlie is the chocolate dog. He is the boss of everything that happens at the Chocolate Dog in Deer River. He's like a yellow lab mix. He's just adorable. Next mayor of Deer River, maybe, too. I'm not sure. You know, I'm working on it. So, and I just was someone who had never stopped in Deer River, never been to Deer River except to drive through it to go somewhere else. Why would I stop? Because other than getting gas, I didn't feel like there was anything here for me. And then my husband was like, there's chocolate there now, Jennifer. And that's, I mean, I stopped. So, yeah. And then I opened my business here in Deer River. My shop opened in July, and it's a non-alcoholic bottle shop. And, yeah, we just have everything here that I'm an equal opportunity drinker. So you can have with or without alcohol. And then we also have THC beverages and edibles, along with lovely gifts and things like that.
How'd you get the idea to do a business like this?
I walked into Lady Superior non-alcoholic bottle shop in Grand Marais on a trip, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is what I've been looking for my whole life. And it became a pop-up that then turned into a space.
Also joining our conversation was Nikki Ossie, who with her husband owns Blueberry Hills Golf Course and Resort. I asked her how the tourism business is going.
I mean, it's been the busiest that I have ever seen at our little nine-hole golf course. We don't take tee times. We probably should start thinking about doing that. But we are very laid-back kind of people, and we just want to make sure that people just go have fun. We built our 28-site RV park. We actually opened in July of 2020. Probably not the best time to open that, but that's when it happened, and we have been rocking it, and which is fantastic. And we took a chance on our town, but that's exactly why we're all here today, because we're all taking a chance on a little town that we can make a great place. Mm-hmm. And we're making that happen.
Yeah.
I asked Nikki how she sees her own role in making Deer River a livelier, more successful place.
Trying to be the cheerleader for all the new businesses that are coming into Deer River. I check in often just to say, hey, what's happening?
She's killing it in that department, too, by
Thank you. I just love the fact that we're getting new small businesses in town, and I know how tough that can be when you're first starting out. And I'm just here to try to be the supporter and the cheerleader, for real.
No, and she, for real, is that person. Come in. How's it going? I hope you're having a great day. I can cry on her shoulder.
Yes.
And or sell her Shirley Temple. So
that's right.
Yes.
Why is so much changing in the Deer River business community? Here's Bree Church.
Personally, I think I have to give credit to the Chocolate Dog.
Same.
And her momentum and her energy and her amazing products in store and her personality. She's doing a fantastic job over there. And that just is what kickstarted, I think, the whole area. And then came, you know, Lady Sippers, the flower shop, the Dodge & Co. I mean, it just is continuing to grow. And so a leap of faith in our community.
Say it again.
To open up her new shop now that she moved to the area.
The community here rallies behind people like no other community I've met. And I literally told my husband like a month and a half ago, I've always said, where else could we move? We could go anywhere. And I said, you know, if we move anywhere, I just want to move to Deer River. And we live in Bovee right now, and it's lovely, and I love my neighbors and all that. Like, it's a really great spot here.
Yes.
So I think that is felt. And that's felt by the 94-year-old woman that comes in once a week and by the 17-year-olds that come in with their mom and pick out sodas or a pair of earrings. Like, they do. And that's because Chelsea took a chance. That's why I'm here. These ladies continue to push forward and make it possible for people like me who aren't from Deer River really feel like part of the community.
Jen Gorman. I asked Brianne Church, who grew up in Deer River and has lots of family around, what she pictures as the town 20 or 30 years from now.
For me, honestly, like being a landlord, my goal is obviously to have a safe and clean place places for people to live, okay? I would like a community that feels safe for all of my children when they grow up and when I have grandchildren someday and they want to come back after college. That's kind of where my perspective is. Very kid-focused at the moment, obviously.
How old are your kids?
Oh, I have a 2-year-old girl, Lily, and then a 7-year-old guy named Gus.
Thanks to Bree Church, Jen Gorman, and Nikki Ossie for the community building that they're doing and for their hometown pride. Thinking about hometown pride and what exactly is the economy, I went to visit another business owner, Tasha Klocko. Born and raised in rural Itasca County, Tasha got advanced degrees at university in Mankato and Minneapolis, where she and her husband Andy were living when they decided to start a family and a business, Klocko Brewing. Here's Tasha.
So Andy's from northern Wisconsin, also from a paper mill town, but it's just like a mini Grand Rapids. So when we first went there, I was like, oh, I recognize this. So it was really easy for us to be here and have that connection back to the Northwoods for us. It was very important for us to raise our family in that. So we started the business. We moved actually December 2016. Incorporated January 2017, had our kid March 2017, and then the brewery opened October 2017. So it was a very quick turnover from moving to getting everything together and opening, which is unheard of in the brewing industry in particular, to have everything kind of fall into place that quickly. And that's a real testament to the enthusiasm that people brought to us from the city, the region, the construction companies. Hawk was who we worked with there, the bank, Woodland. Like, we were very lucky that everyone just jumped on board all in, and we worked hard and they worked hard, and here we are. 2.5 years later, the pandemic hit, and that was crazy. Andy and I found out that we could run the brewery by ourselves, but we didn't like doing it that way. We would basically, he would come in, work all day, and then I would tag out with him so he could be home with our kid. And then I would work the rest of the time opening the tap room for, like, liquor store hours, we would call it, where people just come in and buy crowlers. And that was huge for us, like, really seeing the community buy in and really help support us and make sure that we didn't go under like a lot of other places did during that time. I think what was most impressive to us when we moved to the community, which made what made the biggest impression for us was the amount of love and support that we got from other business owners in the area. And not only that, but people in general who were really enthusiastic about what we were doing. They saw the vision of us wanting to be an open and welcoming community space, kind of modeled more after like a traditional European beer hall style of, this is a community space, it's for everyone. We have seen so much joy and connection in our community throughout our whole time being open. We've seen baby showers, we've seen wakes, we've seen retirement parties, we've seen bachelor parties, bachelorette parties, celebrations of life. We've seen literally every type of event that you could possibly see in someone's lifetime. And it's so heartening to see that connection that people have with one another. And we see so much negativity in the mainstream media these days, and there's a lot of doom and gloom. But when you step out in your community, you see all of that brightness, that joy, that hope, that connection that I think that we lose when we sit on Facebook or doom scroll. It's very heartening to see when I'm in the kitchen at Boulder Tap House after I check their beer and one of the servers is talking about the full circle moment she had when she got coffee in the morning from the barista who was actually sat in her section the night before and tipped her the same tip that she gave her in the morning for her coffee. And we see that constantly. Like, I'm down at North and Bloom getting a flower arrangement for someone that we deliver beer to that I know has lost a parent. And I'm bringing locally grown flowers from Grand Rapids to these accounts to, you know, say, hey, I see you. I recognize your pain. You're not alone. You're not an island. I understand that you're going through a rough time and you still have to keep running your business and you still have to show up and be presentable. So seeing that come full circle almost on a daily basis, like our staff will, you know, tip their barista and their barista is going to get a cookie at Dragonfly, and Dragonfly is going to go see the kitties in the mall, and they're going to use it to give back to the animals in the community that don't have a home yet. You know, it's just, it's so closed in so many ways, and it's so fascinating to see the embracing of one another and see that recognition of one another, the humanity in one another.
You know, you read economists sometimes have measured the effects of buying local. You know, they say every dollar spent locally circulates three times, I think is what I've heard, or I don't know.
That doesn't
number.
Surprise me. Yeah.
Yeah. But what you just said is a different kind of measure, isn't it, of how much the stuff circulates?
Yeah, and how quickly it can circulate. It's staggering, really, like the amount of impact that one another has on each other. And it just makes me think more and more about reminding people to look inward and look at their communities and to really, like, dive in, like, go all in on your communities. And I think that's what we're going to be seeing more and more of from folks. I think that's going to be a necessary part of a way forward, because we're not going to be able to have these conversations if we're holed up in our house. And it's not like what we're asking for from people is to go spend money. It's not about money. It's about the connection. I think that's where we need to focus on.
Thanks to Tasha Klockow. She'll be a featured teller at a live show we're putting on at Klockow Brewing on February 28th, Storytelling for Spirit and Courage. Put that on your calendar, the last Saturday of February. And thanks to our other tellers today, Jen Gorman, Nikki Ossie, Bree Church, Annie Humphrey, and Simon Gretton. I'm Michael Goldberg. We'll have another hour of story and song this time next week. A salute to some radio heroes. Meantime, stay warm and stay human.
You can hold my hand when you need to. I can be a mountain when you're feeling valley low. I can be a street light showing you the way home. 'Cause you can hold my hand when you need to let go. I want a house with a crowd.
This is